I'd like to talk tonight about clinging to views. In a sutta, Buddha asked, monks, and I'm paraphrasing a little, monks, can you think of any view that can be depended upon without leading to sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair? And the monks answered, no, Lord. And Buddha said, very good, monks. Like, y'all get A's. So views. Views are a big part of what we do all the time. We don't always notice it. Both neuroscience and Buddhism recognize that our minds operate using a cognitive grid. It is composed of knowledge, memories, conclusions of chains of reasoning that we've been through, the attitudes that result from those conclusions or opinions, preferences. These things shade into mood, emotion, etc. So it's a big chunk of what Buddha called mental formulations. And I've heard it discussed in different contexts as views of what is this? To do I like this or not? What's my opinion about whatever? This cognitive grid that's composed of our views is kind of like a virtual navigation screen. I have a good friend who has one for backing up her car, or video games, or, you know, I've seen it on TV, you know, controlling drones. This cognitive grid lets us move around in our world efficiently using what we've learned. So, you know, there are shortcuts, abbreviations. We don't have to run through it all over again. Our mind's like sound bites. That's why our whole political system pretty much hinges on getting a good sound bite. The problem is... Well, there are a couple of problems, but kind of the obvious one is the, I don't know if computer people still use this expression, GIGO, G-I-G-O, garbage in, garbage out. Well, that's kind of how our views work. You know, sometimes they're just wrong. The views that we have developed about what is this are just erroneous. And, you know, that's the way it is, but sometimes views can cause us real trouble and just pointless suffering. Generally, the most garbage-prone views that we have are the old stuff and the most abbreviated. We get to think that they must be true. I've believed this for so long. We don't even notice it. We just trust it. Or maybe we do notice it and we consider it one of our core values. And we're not going to question it, not for nothing. Not all of our views are deeply entrenched. Some, like I said, are just wrong. They can be fresh and very simple. For example, someone dreams about being lost in the Arctic and then wakes up and finds that the window's open and it's cold. The brain and the mind like meaning. They like coherent meaning to things. And so the brain does this a lot. There are plenty of studies that demonstrate the brain will slap an explanation onto something and then tell us about it. Whoever us is. Anyway, that's another whole Dharma talk. Yeah, the brain is so enamored of coherence that it really doesn't care sometimes about accuracy. Gil Fronsdale, he told a story on himself about being on a retreat, and his mind wouldn't settle down. I mean, it happens to everybody. And it was his aspiration that he was going to do concentration practice, and his mind just wouldn't go there. And the thought arose, I can't concentrate. And then, I'm a bad meditator. And then, uh-oh, I'm a teacher. And then, what do I do? Do I confess? Do I have to retire? There goes my career. So this chain of thought was the result of the first view that arose. I can't concentrate. And is that right? Is it wrong? Well, most of us know, I'm looking around the room, you've all done a fair amount of practice. You know, there are days when you just can't. But to take that and assume that you're never going to be able to again, or that even for the rest of the day you're not going to be able to. What Gil had to do to break this chain of views was to just ask the question, so what? So what if I can't concentrate right now, in this moment, the moment that matters? And it was clear that all of these other views that had arisen, that tormented him for some time, were completely empty. They had no substance to them. Opinions in human life are both dearly loved and hated. Mostly we love our opinions and we hate other people's. We love to express our opinions. Notice that I shifted to the first person plural because I'm definitely with you on this. I'm with all beings. I can remember plenty of opinion fests that I have just had so much fun. It's energizing. I go home and I think, wow, I'm in with the in crowd. These are great people. They really think things through and they seem to like me. And boy, that was a great party. The problem is that even though they may never be mentioned, on the other side of my opinion is someone else's. And this opinion fest becomes us versus them. And so in a way, although it feels like bonding, it is an exercise in aversion, group aversion. And we have all seen in history what this looks like when it's blown up and magnified. It leads to war. It leads to mobs. Not always. I'm not saying that you have an opinion today and tomorrow you're going to be wearing a swastika. Not at all. But it's a wrong turn. Let me put it that way. One of the allures of opinion feeding is that socially it's related to status. It's sort of like whoever gets to express the most opinions the loudest has this aura of status because there's at least an illusion that people are listening to that person. he or she is getting listened to. Or, you know, that seems to be the takeaway for the most opinionated person in the group. Aldous Huxley used to very intentionally prepare himself for parties by reading some article that touched on controversy, preparing his opinions about it so that when he got to the party, he could expound about what he thought about this, that, or whatever. And there's also, I noticed this, well, I don't know if education is a factor or what, but it seems to be becoming more prevalent that people believe that having an opinion is the same thing as thinking. And it make, I don't know if it's related to the very common question, well, what do you think about X? My wife tells me that in her art classes, she'll say, what do you think about the use of shading in this drawing? And her students will say, well, I don't really like it. And she has to explain that that's not really the question. Doesn't really answer the question about what do you think. Opinions become a part of the idea of who I am. We got them about everything. We've got them about politics, religion, what activities are fun or smart or popular or dorky, what fashion looks good, what is fashionable, what clothes do I like, and you know, why, and the list goes on and on, how you decorate your house. So, pop quiz. I'll ask you, what did Buddha ask the monks? Did he ask the monks if they knew any view that didn't lead to suffering? The answer is no. That's not what he asked them. He asked them if there are any views that you can cling to without it leading to sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. No, Lord, there are none. Now, the efficiency of our cognitive grid is a survival mechanism. It's what makes this great ape dominate the planet. But if we cling to it, if we think that it is me or mine, then we're in for trouble. We're just inviting it. In just the example of Gil in the retreat, you know, this train of thought, this train wreck of thought, went on for, you know, at least a meditation period, 45 minutes, maybe longer. I was distracted the other day, and I had an expectation that my wife would be home at 7 o'clock. And, you know, late happens. So by 7:30, I was just beginning to wonder if I should start dinner or whatever. And at 8, I was frantic. It was dark and hadn't heard a word. And by 9:45, I had to call a friend. I was really concerned. I'd called the highway patrol. They didn't have her body anywhere. And I didn't know what to do. And I was also angry. Like, she's done this before. She should call. Doesn't she know? Didn't I make it clear? Call me. And I was aware of the fact that I was using the anger to distract myself from the fear. And I was allowing that to happen because I've been through grieving. I don't want to go through it again. I'd like to, you know, I'm human. I'd like to put it off as long as possible. And I had to call a friend and kind of talk through it. And I really can't tell you what it was But just all of a sudden, I realized, oh, this is her night to teach till 10. And all of that suffering disappeared. All of those other views just vanished. And I was giggling at myself. By the time Carla came home and I told her the story, we were hilarious. We had tears streaming down our cheeks an hour and 15 minutes later. But during that time, I was really suffering. In our practice, we learn to be aware of suffering, to pick up on the fact that there's a tension in the body, the muscles are tightening up, maybe heat, whatever signals the body is sending that there's stress. And then, in meditation, to look for what it is am I clinging to? What's the cause of this distress? What thoughts is it associated with? You know, what's the chain of thoughts? One of the best places to start in doing this in meditation, to investigate views, is what we're thinking about our practice. Just like Gil. Oh man, I'm so scattered. My mind is like a grasshopper. Or, oh, I'm just so spacey. What am I going to fall asleep here? I can't pay attention. Or, I'm really restless. This isn't getting me anywhere. Whatever the views are, to just look at them, recognize this is a view. Where did it come? Why am I believing this? Why am I believing this is the night Carla should come home earlier? So when it's related to thoughts about the self, that's a wonderful opportunity. Especially, you know, as Gil went into, oh, I'm bad at this. I can't do this. Because the mother root of suffering is the view of the self. And again, I'm not saying get rid of views, get rid of the cognitive grid, get rid of the idea of self, but just recognize it for what it is. It's a view. What Buddha did in the suttas over and over was to debunk the views of people who came to him by the Socratic method. He would ask them questions, and they'd have to say, no, Lord, no, Lord, over and over until finally they saw that there wasn't really any substance to these views. Another powerful teaching of the Buddhists is that he never gave his views. He never talked about how the world worked or, you know, what the meaning of this or that was. He talked about suffering and how to end it. And if you asked him, Buddha, what do you teach? He would say, I teach suffering and the end of suffering. In order to end suffering, we don't need to understand the world. It's a nice luxury. And in fact, getting by in the world, it's handy to have some navigation screen. But in order to end suffering and a peaceful life, we just need to understand how we cling. And when we investigate our clinging to views, we see that peace is not dependent on any way of seeing things. None of our views are the key to happiness. As Joseph Goldstein says over and over, nothing is to be clung to as I, me, or mine. So, going on a retreat, a residential retreat for a period of time. One of its great benefits is that we don't need views when we're there. Now, there are retreats where people talk, but a silent retreat where you're just doing mindfulness practice, you're not having interactions with people, so you don't need views about much. And you find after a while that you really kind of miss telling people who you are. It's selfing, and it's a phenomenon very common on retreats. Drives you nuts if you don't have anybody to share this with. But after a while, it subsides. When we let go of views, we have an opportunity to really see things as they truly are. It can be scary to not have our good old familiar opinions and the sense of ego reinforcement that they give us, the sense of familiarity of knowing where everything is and what it's worth and whether or not we like it. But this overlay of views, as helpful and comfortable as it is, keeps us from really knowing our experience in the moment. And that moment and that understanding of what I'm experiencing right now, whether or not it causes suffering, and if so, where that came from. Without that, we have no way to be liberated. So, not to get rid of them, but just to see through them. Thank you.